Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 28th day of November, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's spend the next almost half hour or so talking about the kinds of things that the waste stream simply doesn't want you to know, like the continued war against Western civilization and the rule of law. Got several stories to kick us off on that front, because Europe is way ahead of us, outside of places like Minnesota and New York City, anyway. All of these come from the voiceofeurope.com, like this one. Things in Sweden are pretty bad. The migrant invasion there is taking its toll, and the number of sex crimes against Swedish women and girls has more than quadrupled since 2006, according to the Swedish Council of Crime Prevention. Over 10% of all Swedish women have now been sexually assaulted, and more shocking, says the story, when the data is broken down into specific age groups, it reveals that 1 in 3 Swedish women, aged 16 to 24, have now been sexually assaulted. And if you have a clue as to why that might be happening, and dare to talk about it, they'll probably kick you off Facebook, or worse. Here, for example, one of the or worses, a German mother could face prosecution, Achtung, for posting a picture of her daughter's, quote, dark-skinned sex attacker on Facebook. The woman's 12-year-old daughter was supposedly sexually molested on a train from Freiburg to Schengen on Sunday. She then posted a picture of the man, didn't go into further detail other than simply asking, did people know him? After the post was shared thousands of times, the German police stepped in and reposted a strongly censored picture of the original post with a great big red X across it, reading, "Not like this!" And warning the grieving mother that release of a picture without the consent of the pictured person is a real crime and will be prosecuted. They'll take care of it, maybe. But meanwhile, you peons just need to stay out of it. In case you missed it, over the weekend, a French court handed down a verdict there about a refugee from Bangladesh. And you're not allowed to speculate about what god he might worship. He was acquitted of the rape of a high school girl almost 3 years ago, and that was one of two, as it turns out. The victim later attempted suicide, but the reasons for the verdict handed down late last week sound like something right out of the Ninth Circus in California, Stan. It seems the court bought off on the defense that the refugee has different cultural norms. You know, rape is okay when women are relegated to the status of a sexual object, and different cultural codes, so he could have misinterpreted the contact with the girl. Twice, even. Not to worry, though. He will be a registered sex offender, so his upcoming disarmed French victims can no doubt take some solace in that. Meanwhile, in no longer Great Britain, the parents of a high school-age girl, 15 or so, were called racist for daring to question the age of a child migrant from Iran in their daughter's class, just because the guy happened to have a mustache and look about a decade or so older than everybody else. Turns out he was 25 years old, after all, married with children. But remember, folks, when it comes to political correctness, actual facts are immaterial. Which leads me to this story next, also from the UK, in this case the Daily Mail, concerning the continued invasion of the southern United States by the mercenary migrant invasion caravan. And what's interesting here is the admission of the hypocrisy of the waste stream fake news left by at least one element thereof. Revealed, says their headline, the Obama regime, they didn't use that term, used tear gas against border migrants no less than 80 times, that's 80 times, folks, while President Trump comes in for huge, hefty criticism from the progressive socialist left for daring to use it just once. Data, it says, shows the same tear gas used on migrants at the U.S. border with Mexico on Sunday was also used under the Obama administration about 80 times during Obama's latter years. This from Homeland Security's official figures. And specifically, it was used 26 times at the border in 2012, 27 times in 2013, 15 times in 2014, and 8 times in 2015. Notice how they were using it less and less, though, as the invasion increased. Maybe there's a message there. Still, though, well over an average of once a month. But that doesn't stop the never-Trumpers from denouncing his action as overkill. Interestingly, though, they admit, there's barely any footage or photos of the tear gas being deployed under the Obama regime. And yes, there's a message there, too. And maybe the message is something along the lines of what Dave Hodges at the Common Sense Show is suggesting in a piece where he talks about what we know about the caravans and actually references an interview with a Border Patrol agent by the Criminally Negligent Network. The so-called asylum seekers, it says, are 75% male and under the age of 35. They appear to be very athletic, even military, in fact. And hey, folks, maybe that indicates why it is that these asylum seekers don't fly the flag of the country they're seeking asylum in, but the flag of the country they're allegedly fleeing from. And when these groups have arrived at the border, said the Border Patrol agent, quote, they push the women and children to the front of the line, and the terrorists in the back begin to rock, meaning to throw rocks, at our personnel, unquote. And at that point, basically, CNN shut him down and cut him off. Says Hodges, they couldn't have ended the interview any more abruptly because this was not the predetermined narrative that the anti-Trump network wanted to promote. Do you think? Dave Hodges, though, goes several steps further, and not for the first time, saying that he's been repeatedly informed by more than one deep cover intelligence source that the ports of entry locations along the border, like Tijuana, will not be where the real action lies. The real action, he says, will in fact lie away from the cameras in remote border crossings where low-lying fences and water are the only barriers to entry. And who will be coming across? Essentially, heavily armed Central American paramilitary troops. Oh, and in case you're curious, does President Trump know about this? Yes, he does, even if James the Accoster from CNN insists on lying to you that it's not an invasion. Who is this guy that thinks he was elected president anyway? And if you ponder how it is that the fake news media is lying about the existing mercenary migrant invasion, it becomes increasingly obvious why they're lying about the real threats. Well, by complete silence. One more log on that particular fire. In this case, from the official birdcage liner of record, the New York Times and MSNBC contributor Michelle Goldberg has a novel theory. Well, not so novel when you consider the knee-jerk progressive waste stream ministry of truth. Why are Trump supporters so nasty, mean, and evil? Well, says the headline, maybe they're just bad people. And that, folks, is probably already more time than this particular bit of bovine scatological opinion actually deserves, other than to just drive home the obvious point. Speaking of bad people, however, this is at least some comic relief. Bill and Hillary Clinton spoke to hundreds of empty seats, said Christina Lela at the Gateway Pundit, on the first night of their Evening with the Clintons tour in Toronto. Yeah, I know. Unless they were offering free uranium samples or at least some political kickbacks, why would anybody bother? And that seems to be the gist of the story. Ticket sales leading up to the Clintons' speaking engagement on Tuesday evening were abysmal, which led to tickets being sold on StubHub for a lot less than what they were originally asking, a paltry $15 a pop in this case. Earlier Tuesday, hundreds of tickets were still available on Ticketmaster, and according to the NTK network, Ticketmaster didn't even bother to offer tickets in the upper levels of the arena, the really cheap seats. And this is kind of funny, too. A Canadian woman attending the speaking engagement posted a photo showing a huge number of empty seats about 20 minutes before Bill and Hillary were scheduled to come out on stage, and the Gateway Pundit had to post a screenshot since the original tweet has been deleted. Gee, folks, would it be out of line for your host to suggest that there are probably more heavily armed troops crossing surreptitiously across the southern border into the United States than there were genuine Hitlery fans, even in socialist Toronto? But one thing's for sure, the waste stream doesn't want you to know about either. One more bit of good news, the special election in Mississippi is over. That didn't take long. I guess we didn't have to wait for the rigged votes to come in. And Republican and Trump supporter Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith handily defeated her insurgent challenge there. The runoff, by the way, was necessary because of a strong conservative challenge to Cindy Hyde-Smith from the right, so she was unable to achieve more than 50% of the vote amidst heavy turnout the first time around. But now she has become the first woman ever elected to Congress from Mississippi, giving the GOP a net gain of 2 seats in the midterm elections, in spite of all the late chicanery and real election rigging. and a 53-47 advantage in the upper chamber, a margin that Fox News says could prove critical in the no-doubt contentious confirmation battles to come. Here's another story about public opinion that may prove critical in the contentious battles to come. Says Monica Showalter, writing for the American Thinker, a poll shows that more than 70% of Mexicans, too, have had it with the migrant caravan, and maybe this helps explain why the Mexican government response to the border riot of the caravanners on Saturday in Tijuana was so swift, what with reinforcements, 500 arrests, 69 criminal charges filed, and almost 100 on-the-spot deportations. Well, look no further than this story from the Mexican press. A poll released on Sunday by El Universal, one of Mexico's biggest newspapers, found 7 in 10 Mexicans had a negative view about the arrival of the migrants, with more than half, or 52%, supporting blocking them from entering the country to start with, and 55% supporting tougher measures against future caravans. And notably, she says, the poll showed what Mexicans thought before the latest riot. One can only guess how high the numbers are now. What with local news in San Diego reporting $5 million in lost sales for just the few hours that the border was shut down. But a piece of what she calls buried news, dug up by NBC, is likely indicative. Quote, after the shutdown, some Tijuana residents and business owners came out with bats and sticks and threatened the migrants. They should not be here in Tijuana, said one upset resident to Mexican authorities. The fury, says Showalter, seems to have driven some folks over the edge, and she said NBC tried to bury that aspect as unimportant. The trouble is, more and more Mexicans see the invasion for what it is. They don't like the crime, the garbage, the pestilence, the lawlessness the caravan has brought, and they don't like the special treatment either, the free foods, jobs, medical care, and all the other bennies the migrants are getting, while Tijuana's poor continue to get nothing. All of this shows how deep the well of discontent is, and further, she says, it shows how badly misleading the initial press reports were about the protests, claiming originally it was just a few locals complaining on social media, and it by no means represented the majority. And I guess that's an easier viewpoint to promulgate if Facebook helps by censoring anything contradicting the official narrative. But she concludes what we're really seeing here is a sea change in Mexican sentiment towards the illegals, which is in turn an obstacle to the socialists in the states. Yeah, they may still have their hooks in California's state government, but as the Democrats and their political activists and left-wing lawyer allies nationally seek to open borders and undermine the rule of law to expand the welfare state and secure elections here, but they're still going to find a wall of opposition now, even from the south. Mexico's no longer shipping large numbers of illegal aliens, and public attitudes there, she says, are changing in one of the sharpest U-turns in public sentiment I've ever seen. And not surprisingly, at least some of the migrants, those perhaps not quite as motivated by military objectives, are starting to pack up and go home. And at least that'll make the really nasty ones easier to spot in the crowds. We don't want to forget about the other moves towards war. Like this one, Chinese ambassador warns of dire consequences if no deal concerning the U.S.-China trade war is at hand. And this, says Zero Hedge, follows Trump's chief economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, having poured cold water earlier this morning on expectations for an imminent resolution of that trade war when he said that negotiations in the run-up to this week's G20 talks have, quote, not yielded any progress. And unless something changes, the administration will move ahead with the next phase of tariffs. Echoing reports from the U.S. Trade Representative earlier this month, he said there hasn't been much of a change in China's approach. But the real fireworks may have come from Chinese ambassador to the U.S. Kui Tiankai, who warned of dire consequences if the U.S.-China trade war escalates. Asked whether he thought hardliners in the White House were seeking to separate the closely linked U.S. and Chinese economies, Kui said he did not think it was possible or helpful to do so, but did warn, quote, I don't know if people really realize the possible consequences, the impact, the negative impact, if there is such a decoupling. And he followed that up with a surprisingly strong statement and an even more shocking comment in which Chiang Kai went so far as to tacitly hint that the lessons of history suggest that if there is no deal, what comes next could not only be another Great Depression, but another war. Quote, the lessons of history are still here, and in the last century, we had two world wars, and in between them, the Great Depression. I don't think anybody, he continued, should really try to have a repetition of history. These things should never happen again, so people have to act in a responsible way, unquote. In a follow-up, he warned that if it doesn't get fixed, it could degenerate into an all-out conflict. He called the outcome unimaginable and said the two countries should do everything to prevent it, but did not rule out an all-out conflict, which is what the Ukraine and its puppet masters in the European and U.S. deep states really seem to be hankering for in Crimea. During a Ukrainian television interview on Tuesday, President Petro Poroshenko said that the threat of a full-scale war with Russia could be imminent as tensions rise following the Ukraine-inspired event with Russia near the Kerch Strait on Sunday, where three Ukrainian naval vessels challenged the Russians and got exactly what they were promised. Poroshenko condemned what he described as the rapidly increased Russian military presence on their border, saying the number of Russian tanks at bases located along our border has tripled. And he concluded that all of this military buildup, which they seem to be encouraging, means the country is, quote, under threat of full-scale war with Russia, unquote. He's not happy with more and more Russian military exercises on that border either, noting that, quote, I don't want anyone to think this is fun and games. On Tuesday, the Brits upped the tension by dispatching the HMS Echo, a UK Royal Navy survey vessel and monitoring ship, to the Black Sea, following Britain's leaders condemning what they described as Russian aggressive actions in seizing the invading Ukrainian ships and crew off the coast of Crimea, and an accompanying Ministry of Defense statement claimed the reconnaissance ship would, quote, demonstrate the UK's support to ensuring freedom of navigation, unquote. And it kind of makes you wonder how they'd feel about freedom of navigation by foreign vessels up the Thames. But that's not all. There are also calls by former commander of the Royal Navy, Admiral Lord West, to send a much more powerful and capable Type 45 destroyer, or guided missile warship, into the Black Sea amid these escalating tensions. Oh, and let's not forget what may be the crucial matter behind all of this. Poroshenko is facing what looks like a losing battle for re-election, and as a result, he has justified the imposition of martial law, maybe they'll even cancel the election, based on the mere possibility of a future war with Russia that they seem to be so anxious to foment. Even though, as Zero Hedge notes, he'd previously claimed, quote, martial law doesn't mean war, when he first made the announcement over the weekend. Maybe what it really means is president for life. Pepe Escobar, via the Asia Times, probably calls it a bit more accurately. He says the latest chaos in the Kerch Strait looks, quote, more like a cheap ploy by desperate neocons than any Russian aggression, because this seems to be all about undermining Trump's next powwow with Vladimir Putin. When the Ukrainian Navy sent a tugboat and two small gunboats on Sunday to force their way through the Kerch Strait into the Sea of Azov, he begins, they knew in advance the Russian response would be swift and merciless. After all, Kiev was entering waters claimed by Russia with military vessels without clarifying their intent or even going through the proper procedures that they'd gone through before. Your host notes, as we talked about yesterday. Their intent, though, was clear, to raise the stakes in the militarization of the Sea of Azov. Kiev announced this past summer their intent to build a new naval base in the Sea of Azov by the end of 2018. And that's an absolute red line for Moscow. Kiev may have trade access to Mariupol, but forget about military access. And most of all, says the author, forget about supplying a Ukrainian military fleet in the port of Berdyansk capable of sabotaging the immensely successful Russian-built bridge to Crimea. Predictably, says Escobar, Western media has been complaining about so-called Russian aggression, the gift that keeps on giving, and blaming Russia for its so-called overreaction, while simultaneously overlooking the fact that Ukraine's incursion was with military vessels, not fishing boats. Russian resolve has been quite visible, as powerful Ka-52 Alligator assault helicopters were promptly on the scene. After Washington and Brussels uncritically bought into the Kiev-Russian aggression hysteria and got the UN Security Council to play along, their captive media continues to ignore another big issue. The Kerch incident is a clear violation by Kiev of Articles 7, 19, and 21 of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. The author then quotes Rostislav Ishchenko, arguably the sharpest observer of Ukraine-Russia relations, in a piece written before the Kerch incident, who said, quote, Ukraine itself recognized the right of Russia to introduce restrictions on the passage of ships and vessels through the Kerch Strait, having obeyed these same rules in the summer. But now, chaos in the Ukraine is the norm, and President Petro Poroshenko is bleeding. The hryvnia is a hopeless currency, Kiev's borrowing costs are the highest level since a bond sale in 2018, and the failed state has been under IMF so-called reform since 2015, with no end in sight. Poroshenko's approval rate barely touches 8%. His chances of re-election, at least before martial law, were virtually zero. So, welcome to the provocation. Thus, says the author, the Kerch Strait incident looks a lot like a cheap provocation, bearing all the hallmarks of a U.S. think tank ploy, and it's automatically interpreted as Russian aggression, regardless of the facts. Indeed, any such tactics are good when it comes to derailing the upcoming Trump-Putin summit at the G20 meeting in Buenos Aires this coming weekend. Lately, folks, your host is among many that have been warning about the coming real climate change, solar-induced as opposed to anthropogenic, and cyclical to boot. Trouble is, it's global cooling rather than what the Algorian liars have been hyperventilating about. And it's getting harder and harder to cover up. Even the generally Kool-Aid-drinking Daily Mail had to warn on Monday that ocean circulation in the North Atlantic is at its weakest point in 1,500 years, and also, coincidentally, at levels that previously triggered a mini-ice age, this according to yet another new study, not part of the bought-and-paid-for settled science horse stream. Lots of others have picked up on the University of Hong Kong study as well, especially as they keep trying to spin it as a direct consequence of global warming. Can you believe it? Yeah, we shouldn't. They are trying to cover their bases, but the story does say something along these lines. A weak circulation of ocean waters in the North Atlantic could signify that a mini ice age is just around the corner, exactly like solar scientists and those who can look at 200-year cycles have been saying for quite a while now. Scientists, it said, the kind that aren't bought and paid for by East Anglia or the IPCC, have discovered that weakening currents look similar to those that happened right before the Little Ice Age, a cold spell observed between about 1600 and 1850 AD. Cycles expert Martin Armstrong cuts through the CYA hype and says global cooling is in fact real. Is there a major temperature low coming around 2046 or so? While NASA, he begins, has now confirmed that the outer atmosphere is getting cooler, it seems desperately insane for people to keep denying the possibility that it's global cooling taking place rather than global warming, when the former brings famine and the latter brings economic expansion as civilizations rise. The rise of Rome was due to global warming, not the man-made kind, mind you. As was the case after the Dark Age, and they call that the medieval warming period between AD 950 and 1300. But the concern from just a technical model perspective is that the warming period we have enjoyed post-1600 and the low of the Little Ice Age has not exceeded that of the medieval warming period. So if we simply look at this chart from a technical perspective, it appears that we've been more or less in a grand downtrend for the past 6,000 years, which is deeply concerning, because we tend to have these periods when civilization turns downward, and they tend to correspond with colder temperatures, shorter growing seasons, and famines. Consider what we've seen lately. In Australia, just 1 week from summer, it's still snowing on Victoria. In fact, one of the top NASA scientists has broken camp and warned that the surface temperature of the sun, cyclical in nature, has collapsed so much that he fears a new ice age is upon us. Professor Valentina Zarkova, who's been saying something similar for several years, is now saying that this downturn probably will end up being worse than even she's forecast, and last longer too. And meanwhile, of course, the U.S. Northeast has had the coldest Thanksgiving in 150 years. Martin Armstrong goes on to regale us with a lot of history, including from the U.S. in the 1700s and 1800s, the kind of thing that the solar cooling deniers would have you ignore, but it's no secret to listeners here. The problem, he says, is that this time around it's not just the severity of the cold, in other words, it's not a one-day event that's getting to people, it's the duration. And if the people who can see cycles are right, and if the trend thus continues next winter, we will have exceeded any short-term reactionary trend, and we'll be looking ahead to see whether the decline ends by 2028 initially or not. But by then it'll be obvious that man-made global warming was a farce and a lie, which is what all of us should have known when we heard the term settled science anyway. The bigger question is how many gullible people will starve and freeze to death for having believed Big Brother's lies. Forewarned is still forearmed. Thanks for joining us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.